A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host as we explore the changes at work in the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues that are challenging these arts organizations. Today, we'll continue our series on the arts and health and wellness. The National Endowment for the Arts is accepting applications for its Creative Forces Community Engagement Grants, which will support arts organizations that offer programs for military members and their families. My guests will be Bill O'Brien, Project Director for Creative Forces, Christine Bio, Director of Arts and Humanities Grantmaking for Mid-America Arts Alliance, and Niali Adokai, Director of the Veterans in the Arts Initiative Program at George Mason University. Let's start off with a look at some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. Lincoln Center received a $10 million gift from David Rubenstein to continue expanding the activities and programs offered at Lincoln Center's David Rubenstein Atrium, which opened with support of the donor 10 years ago. The privately owned public space hosts a diverse range of public performances, and during the pandemic also began to serve as a polling place and food distribution site. Lincoln Center said the gift will enable it to expand community and art programs through additional local partnerships. The Cleveland Orchestra announced a record gift of $50 million from the Jack, Joseph, and Morton Mandel Foundation. In its statement, the orchestra said it will bolster its endowment, create an opera and humanities festival, and expand its programs. The donation will also support the expansion of digital and streaming initiatives. In addition, the orchestra will change the name of its performance venue from Severance Hall to Severance Music Center, naming its main performance hall for the donors. There are also two obituaries to note. Carlisle Floyd, a major composer of 20th century American opera, passed away at the age of 95. According to the New York Times, his best-known opera, Susanna, became one of the most performed operas in America, following its performance at New York City Opera in 1956. Among his other works were Of Mice and Men and Willie Stark, adapted from All the King's Men. Born in Lata, South Carolina in 1926, he received his bachelor's and master's in music from Syracuse University and began composing while teaching at Florida State. In 2004, he received the National Medal of Arts. The music world also lost bandleader and Hammond organist Dr. Lonnie Smith. According to NPR, Smith, who was born in 1942, began learning music by ear as a teen, playing trumpet and brass instruments in school, and happened upon a Hammond organ at a local store. He went on to play in in-house and backup bands, and then became an organist for George Benson. He was named an NEA Jazz Master in 2016 and released his final album, Breathe, this past year. Smith was 79. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the arts world. Back in 2004, the National Endowment for the Arts partnered with the Department of Defense to offer a creative writing program for U.S. military members and their families to tell their stories, part of an effort to explore how the arts could help them deal with trauma and the other stresses they face. That concept soon expanded to a creative arts therapy program at Walter Reed Medical Center, and then to other VA medical centers, military hospitals, and community centers. Now, the NEA is looking to expand this Creative Forces initiative by providing support for programs around the country through its Creative Forces Community Engagement Grants, partnering with the Mid-America Arts Alliance. I recently spoke with Creative Forces Program Director Bill O'Brien, Christine Bile, Director of Arts and Humanities Grantmaking at Mid-America, and Niali Dokai, Director of the Veterans in the Arts Initiative Program at George Mason University, which offers guitar and ukulele workshops for military members and their families.
It's going to open this up to really every community in America. And we've spent years really kind of testing and assessing the kinds of data collection that we'll do. And specifically, we're going to be looking to promote resilience, social connections, successful transition to civilian life for participants. These are the military-connected folks who've been exposed to trauma. And then for the organizations and the grantees, we're going to be looking at how these kinds of programs can help build capacity and stronger networks to support these populations and ultimately raise understanding for all of us and what these values and what these impacts are being deployed really in these ways.
Christine, on a kind of a broader view, what have you seen in terms of some programs that have been developed?
Mid-America Arts Alliance has supported a number of different grant programs over the last couple of years. Going back as far as 2013, we offered and still do a grant program called the Artistic Innovations Grant. And through that grant program, we became aware of an organization called Songwriting with Soldiers, which is an organization that hosts retreats for soldiers through which musicians work with those soldiers to write songs about their experiences, both in the military as well as in their personal lives. And so those retreats then evolve in a number of different ways. Sometimes there are concerts that are presented where those musicians who have helped them create those songs perform for an audience, oftentimes for those family members of those soldiers who have participated in the retreat. There have been recordings of CDs that have come out of those kinds of retreats. So through that kind of program, we have just seen a great sense of, a number of personal benefits and interest from the community to better understand what that experience is that our military men and women are going through. And certainly through song, it's a mutual language, one that everyone kind of shares and can understand. So that's one in particular that Mid-America has supported. There have been other visual arts programs that we've seen evolve in across Kansas, where there was an exhibition of paintings and other visual work that was led by an individual artist out of Manhattan, Kansas, who put together materials reflecting upon her uncle's participation in the military and presented that in Manhattan, Kansas, where Fort Riley is located. So we've just found a number of different opportunities and ways to engage new audiences that we haven't been able to reach previously and have found kind of fit within the scope of this kind of program that is evolving and developing through Creative Forces.
Neathi, I understand the musical side of that is also part of the program at George Mason, using guitar and ukulele classes. Tell us about the genesis of that project and what you've seen.
So our guitar workshop series really began as a series of conversations with our military connected community members, and they told us about the importance of the guitar in their lives. They told us about guitars that had been a part of their younger years, whether childhood music lessons or, you know, garage jam bands that had occurred, you know, prior to military service. They told us about that guitar that was taken on a deployment. They told us about guitars when they returned home that were part of campfire events and church events. And so our guitar series for our military connected community members began in 2017. And in that, we noticed that so many of our participants were also military kids and teenagers who participated alongside their parents. And so we created a dedicated songwriting series for military kids. And these military kids brought with them these uniquely personalized ukuleles to this songwriting series for military kids. And we were just so interested in the story behind these ukuleles. They were different colors, the decorations were so unique as each military kid themselves. From there, we began to consider the option of creating a ukulele workshop series for our military connected community members. And that's exactly the time that Creative Forces offered us the opportunity to have a community connections project through our state arts agency, the Virginia Commission for the Arts. And so we really took this as an opportunity to explore that idea further. Who could we have a ukulele workshop series for, and how would it be enjoyed by our community? And the response that we got was just beyond anything that we would have expected. We had children as young as 6 and 7 participating alongside older siblings and parents and uncles and aunts and grandparents. We also had so many older adults who told us that while the guitar had become an instrument that they could no longer access due to the fact that they no longer had the same dexterity that they had in their youth, the ukulele was something that was very accessible to them because the ukulele was a bit smaller. It had fewer strings. And so they were able to master that pedagogy so much faster. And it wasn't just families and older adults that we saw. We just saw veterans of all ages coming on their own, alongside partners, family members, just anyone that was part of their supportive or family community coming together to make music. And it's just been one of our favorite series to offer ever since.
Arts therapy has been a developing field. And I'm curious how these programs are specially tailored to meet their needs, as opposed to, say, a broader community of rehab or occupational therapy.
The initiative, Creative Forces, has a clinical program and a community-based program. The grant program that the folks on the line here today with you are associated with is part of the community program. And it does build off of what we've learned on the clinical programs. And art therapy, music therapy, dance movement therapy are programs that we support in the clinical side. Those are medical treatments. They're part of behavioral health and or rehabilitative medical treatment. What we're doing with this program is community-based, and it is required that these activities need to be non-clinical activities. However, it also recognizes and I think champions the idea that the arts in community-based delivery systems can address similar needs in different ways. They are appropriately going to avoid things like HIPAA, you know, there's no charting and there's no expectation or sense that this is in any way related to your medical care. But when you think about your health in a more holistic way as a whole person, there are things that in a community-based setting can actually address maybe more effectively. I mean, when we talk about social connection, and, you know, why did we hone in on that? Well, part of it was really assessing what are the needs of these populations. We commissioned a study from Syracuse University on military family needs assessments. And one of the things that we've learned both in that report, but, you know, just anecdotally, it was very clear, is that one of the stressors that is a consistent challenge for military families is the sense of being, in a way, removed from the way you were transferring through life. When you transfer into a military active duty lifestyle, you are not a civilian anymore. You're kind of removed and moved wherever you're told to go. Very frequently, that's especially with people, with families involved, that can be a real challenge. You're uprooted. Not because it was a good time for you to do that for any other reason, except that's what your orders said that you and your family have to do. So this idea of social connection and how that can be delivered in a community-based way makes a lot of sense to us. And building bridges of connection amongst local military and civilian is something that I think is a good thing and a healthy thing for the community as well as the individuals. I think civilians who participate also get something out of it. So the idea of these things promoting health, well-being, and quality of life is something that's consistent across both the clinical and community programs. You're going to approach it in a different way if you're a clinician and what you're doing is in co-treatment with a psychiatrist or a speech therapist, for example, as opposed to doing a master class in glass blowing at a studio that's welcoming you in, giving you a safe place to explore these things. You can explore your sense of self and creative expression in ways that helps you understand yourself better and others and what your context to each other is. And we've just been observing over a few years, this idea of social connection is huge, I think, in regards to the types of value and impact that can be delivered in these community settings. But so is building resiliency. The sense of, you know, zoning out into this craft making is something we see and hear over and over again as something that has a calming and sort of a therapeutic effect for people, especially people who are dealing with things like PTSD and they have this constant raised level of anxiety and fight or flight kinds of chemicals coursing through. It's a way to just sort of calm down and be in a safe place and really focus on something for a sustained period of time. And, you know, in terms of successful transition to civilian life, that just makes all kinds of sense in terms of how inviting people into these welcoming, safe rooms is going to eventually feel like home. At least that's what we've been hearing is so important for people who've been through programs previously.
You know, this is really where for George Mason University's Veterans in the Arts Initiative, we find that we really work so hard to tailor to the specific needs of our veteran community and these different types of transitions that they are experiencing when they come to our programming for military connected community members. And some of those transitions might be, as Bill mentioned, a post-injury transition and post-injury community integration after recovering from a traumatic brain injury, or as they're working through a psychological health condition diagnosis. But they might also be experiencing a military to civilian transition, whether after a few years of service or decades of service, that really includes their entire family and support system, because military service goes beyond that service member and really affects the entire family who has served and moved alongside of them through those decades of service. And so we try to welcome everyone who is part of that support system. And then also sometimes we just as humans have life transitions that we're seeking support through. And I think this is something that all of us on this call and all of us who are listening could probably relate to from the past year and what we all experienced as a major life transition during a pandemic. And so overall, we're working with a community that might have so many different motivations for participation as they reflect on their community service. And we seek to provide that support, but we're also just seeking to provide something that's fun and engaging during those transition points. And to what Bill was saying, that we're seeing that the benefits for the participants, they do report back that they get so much of a stronger sense of community, whether they're connected to us in person or virtually, or now in our newest format that we're trying out, which is hybrid workshops to have people participate simultaneously online and in person. And that sense of community comes from these shared experiences of building a skill set together and through finding similar likes in genres of music and preferred songs. They also report an increased interest in learning new skills, which is just really exciting for a researcher, because that is something that can be transferable into so many different types of domains. And then they also just report an increased sense of well-being, and whether it's mental, physical, emotional, or just an overall sense of improved well-being, these are things that we love hearing and we love knowing is happening during these community programs, is something that we strive to continue to support through what it is that we do with our community.
Picking up on what Niyati was saying about the ways in which this helps for our military members, connected members, to better understand themselves and feel a sense of connection. There was a project that Mid-America Arts Alliance supported that took place at Fort Hood called Bass Track Live, which was presented by En Garde Arts. It's a performing arts group out of New York. And they presented this production called Bass Track Live. It's a play based on the stories of Marines and their families. And some 3,000 soldiers, family members, and civilians attended those performances and talkback sessions. And the outreach that was provided by the Army Intrepid Spirit healthcare practitioners there on base. And following that series of events, they conducted a study specifically focusing on the stigmatization of seeking behavioral care as it relates to the struggles that our men and women are experiencing. And following those performances and that series of talkbacks, they found that there was a 36% reduction in that sense of stigma, that not only allowed people to feel like they could ask for help, but then to actually engage and take advantage of the opportunities for help that were there present on base. And so that was really significant and something that we see and hope to have continue to occur as these kinds of projects roll forward.
I love that you brought up stigma, because it's something that was in conversation from the beginning, in the early stages, long before a grant program. Even the name Creative Forces was an attempt to really kind of capture the sense of these activities being approached from a strength-based way, mm-hmm. even if you're addressing spiritual, existential wounds that are so complex I can't put them into words, but I can paint a mask that can communicate it better than I've been able to yet. When you put it into that context, then these activities are less associated with a disease state as much as unveiling some of the mysterious forces that drive the human condition. So whether it's in a clinical setting or whether it's in one of our community settings. And even if the theme that's being explored is deep or heavy, the work is revealing, and the ability to reveal that work is a skill. So it just puts it into an expression of talent rather than admitting or exposing something that's wrong with me. We all have been through things that have coursed through different types of emotions and made us feel different ways, whether happy or sad. And this is a way to exercise those in a way that's not dangerous, but still feels like that it has tremendous stakes. And that's another thing I think that we've heard over and over again is that, for example, glass blowing, we've talked to a number of the veterans that have participated in that. And there's metal work, you know, with Forge and a lot of heat that other programs have incorporated. And over again, we hear this sense of excitement and thrill that there's this danger and a requirement to be really highly focused. And with glass blowing, working as a team, all of these things translate very well from what was perhaps some of the most meaningful aspects of service, especially in wartime. The stakes were high. You were working with and for your team. Danger was everywhere. So you had, you know, there was no opportunity or potential to kind of drift off or daydream. And this kind of brings your focus and attention, but in this instance, to discover something and then, you know, potentially share that discovery with other people, and then you build that connection. And you know, these different themes are all interconnected: resilience, social connection, successful transition. They're different aspects of the same thing.
We are now at a major transition where, with the winding down of activities in Afghanistan, the focus, at least of the American population, has been Iraq, Afghanistan, that area. How have you seen this program reaching families in other arenas, in other theaters?
The Creative Forces Community Engagement Grant Program is really designed to be a very open and welcoming platform of support for all different types of military and veteran communities, including families and caregivers. Obviously, there's a lot of those folks who are associated with the recent wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, the longest wars in American history. But there's a lot of potential for the arts to support aging populations. And there's a lot of, I think there's still a lot of challenges and issues to address related to folks and family members who were part of the Vietnam War. And my dad fought in Korea, there's still a few those folks around, and there's certainly family members around. It really reaches across generations. There's no eligibility requirement that limits it to only the most recent wars. It's really military and veteran populations who have been exposed to trauma. And we are being very open-ended on what we mean by that. The military family needs assessment said two things that I think are really interesting for us and have been useful guideposts for us. One is that there are so many different types of stressors associated with military service and for families and caregivers as well. And by caregivers, we mean family members or others who are supporting in an unpaid way people who may have been wounded or ill and injured as a result of their service. So it is a very kind of broad catcher's mitt that we're thinking about in terms of who gets to call themselves traumatized. It's really an assumption that you've been exposed to it in one way or the other if you've been associated with military service. We don't want to stigmatize it. We don't want to be, you know, constantly hitting people over the head with it. That's one lesson that I think is really important. And the other is that we can often look at the military as a monoculture. We think of these folks with the same haircuts, and we feel like they're all part of the same sort of, they're composed of the same material. In truth, and especially when they're transitioning back out from active duty service, it is among the most diverse populations that you could find anywhere. It is a very, from all walks of life, all ethnicities, et cetera, everyone and every different way of understanding yourself is represented in the military. So to really understand what that kind of diversity is and how we can reach them where they are when they come out is important to keep that. It's part of, you know, we talk about military cultural competency. Part of that is to understand that the military isn't one thing. It's made of people from all different, you know, backgrounds.
While we are certainly looking to reach military-connected populations that are active military, active duty, we haven't mentioned or acknowledged the reservists and National Guard folks that are out there. And those are also populations that we are really hoping that these kinds of programs can reach. They often go unseen because they are amongst us everywhere we go. And they are not going to necessarily be in your military uniforms, and they're not going to be in those community, not necessarily anyway, in communities where there is a fort or an actual military installation. They often go unnoticed, and this kind of grant program could really be a means to connect with those members of our community that give so much and could use a little bit of support.
I think at this time, our community at an intergenerational level has come together more than ever before to support each other because they know what their fellow community members have been through and could be going through. There's just that sense of deep understanding, and we're seeing this everywhere from the military kids who just kind of make sure that they check in on each other to make sure that everyone's prepared and on the same page of music to younger people who are welcoming each other in for the first time, whether they be service members, veterans, reservists, to what Christine said, arriving in our communities, to families, to veterans of all different eras. And we've actually found that this is a time where those intergenerational conversations in our workshops before and after the workshops just mean so much, because the Korean War era, the Vietnam War era, and all the eras after, they've all been through this, you know, to their own experience. Of course, each experience was unique to the individual and to the era during which they served, but there are shared connections there, shared sentiments, shared feelings. And at this time, seeing those connections occur before and after workshops and just having the opportunity to facilitate that for people means more than ever. So I think that really seeing this entire community for the support that they can provide themselves if we provide a platform for them to gather is more poignant than ever. Our military is as diverse as our country, and we just have to provide those opportunities for them to come together, because they are coming together in our community connections projects, in our community engagement projects, and they will continue to do so in the new projects yet to come.
That was my conversation with Bill O'Brien, Program Director of the National Endowment for the Arts Creative Forces Initiative, Christine Bile, Director of Arts and Humanities Grant Making at Mid-America Arts Alliance, and Niadi Dokai, Director of the Veterans and the Arts Initiative Program at George Mason University. More information on the initiative and the grant can be found at arts.gov/initiatives/creative-forces. I hope you enjoy the conversations I bring you each week on Atempo, focusing on the challenges and changing dynamics in the performing arts. But remember that programs like this are made possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for your support. Thank you for listening to A Tempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. Join me again next week as we explore more issues and trends in the world of the performing arts. A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you.